nice with that napkin.
So classy around here.
So classy.
Let me see. Oh.
Ready?
You have no choice. Okay, hey. Bang. The power. We're French pressing this shit, man.
All right, let's do it.
And that's a good feeling, huh?
Yeah, I feel refreshed already.
Yeah, man. So, Esther, what are we drinking today?
Today we're drinking French pressed Colombian coffee.
Why are you so shy? Are you ready? Are we ready to start talking and coffeeing?
Yeah, no, we're ready. I'm just like a little bit, you know, out of sorts this morning. We have some bad news, so I'm just kind of like, I want to be like upbeat like we normally are, but I just found out that Kobe Bryant died, so I'm kind of like in a weird space.
Yeah, so that's I guess we gotta that we just so right now we're it's like noon and we're in Inglewood, California, and we just found out maybe half an hour ago that Kobe Bryant died. I'm sure everyone watching this, they're gonna actually know more.
Not by the time,
by the time this comes out. But right now, the only news that's out, Kobe Bryant has died in a helicopter crash in Northern California.
No, Calabasas.
Calabasas. Yeah.
Oh. That's Southern California.
Oh, sorry.
It's just like above Malibu.
It's in LA County.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it looks like they said four other people right now also perished, no survivors. And
some terrible news to start the day with. It's, you know, especially being in Los Angeles, and I know we're all three of us. Well, I know you're not a transplant. You grew up here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I know we're transplants, but it does feel it certainly feels bad for the city. You know, it's like being in Los Angeles, being in this area, and just knowing we're going to walk the streets and just feel like that sadness. Like, I feel like that same sort of, that, like, kind of pit in my stomach feeling when Nipsey Hussle was killed last year, where, like, the whole city is in mourning.
Yeah. It's weird to us. It's weird because, I'm not from L.A. I came here about 12 years ago, and I'm a big Rockets fan. So, actually, Kobe was, like, an enemy, you know, in the sporting sense. Yeah, but when I heard it, I was like, oh, like, this is, like, It just sucks. It just sucks, and it's a tragedy. And I think we have four daughters.
Yeah, 41 years old.
41. I'm older than Kobe Bryant. You know, it's like that's how. Yeah, I mean, it's young.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to put into words.
It's kind of weird because I was like, oh, I want to talk about the fight cards and stuff like that, but at the same time, I'm like, fighting seems less important when someone dies.
Yeah.
But it's still a world of sports, so it's like, I don't know. And the forum.
Like Laker history.
Yeah, the old home of the Lakers, so the Great Western Forum.
Crazy fights, what a knockout. Then right before about the press record, and that just sucks. And just everyone hug your loved ones. This ride can end anytime.
Life is a precious thing. Appreciate every second of it.
Indeed.
So I guess, you know, the only thing we can do is just go ahead and do what we originally came to do, and that's talk about fights. And we did have some fun times last night in the forum. So Chris Cyborg is now, I think, the first person to have of either gender, which I think is very notable to mention, to have a major title in four different promotions.
Yeah.
That's huge, man.
Were you literally there for every single one? Did you photograph and witness every single? So the strike.
When did she win?
So Strike Force was when she beat Gina, right?
Yeah.
So you shot that.
Mm-hmm.
Invicta. She beat who? She beat
Marlus.
Marlus.
She beat Marlus. You were there for that one. And then
Tonya Evinger at UFC 214. I know you were there for that one.
And then last night.
Oh yeah. 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 I've been there at every single one.
Holy crap.
that's
so
big.
So since you were actually the only person at all four, I was at three of the four, which felt, I don't know, which just kind of, what felt the biggest? What felt most unique? What was your impression of all four of them?
You know, it's funny, like, even though the UFC is, like, the biggest organization.
That one felt the smallest. That one felt, like, the least significant.
Right, it felt like the least significant because her against Gina was the first time women were being main evented on
broadcast television.
Yeah, broadcast television. So it was like, there was that. And it was just massive. And I'm going to interrupt really quickly. Yeah. Sorry. These are Stroop waffles from Marloes Koenen, actually.
Oh, wow.
She,
all right.
She brought them from the Netherlands.
So these are all fresh from the Netherlands. Real shit. So what do we usually do? We put them like over top of our coffee? We do a tea normally, but.
Coffee or tea. Yeah, all right. And you can kind of put it there to keep your coffee warm. Okay. And it kind of warms up your cup.
Nice.
And then dip it in. Anyway, Marloes, also another pioneer. But yeah, so Strikeforce felt huge because it was like the first time. And then Invicta also felt, it was smaller event, obviously, but it felt intimate because it was an all-women's organization. So it had that kind of like...
That was also like prime Invicta.
Right.
And
it was the first time someone had opened up the featherweight division for her.
It was like a rogue feel to the Invicta title win. It just, because they were doing something that was counterculture to a counterculture.
Yeah.
So I think that's a notable thing as well.
Yeah. And I think when she fought Gina, it was at 140, right?
No.
No?
Well, either way.
Either way, I just feel like I remember when in Invicta, one of the big things that Shannon really pushed was that she wanted to make sure that everyone got to fight at their proper weight class.
Mm-hmm.
So she opened a lot of weight classes. Like, it's atom weight all the way through featherweight. Even there are lightweight fights. And it's just like, I remember Cyborg Forever was just having the hardest time finding competition. So it was kind of the first time people started finding, like, other featherweights to fight. Then the UFC, of course, was big because it was the UFC, but
she was fighting Tonya Evinger, who was a career bantamweight.
Career bantamweight, and it came off the weird, because it should have been Jermaine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it should have never been Jermaine. It should have been Cyborg originally for the inaugural 45 belt, but then we had that silly Holly Jermaine fight, which I'm not going to discuss. That was like, and then, of course, Jermaine getting stripped. And then Cyborg fighting ridiculous fights at 140 for absolutely zero reason.
Right.
Just depleting.
With like
herself.
Zero stakes.
Yes. Zero stakes. Just to like, hey, let's see if she dies during weigh-ins. And mm-hmm. and so when she actually won the belt from Tonya, it was just, all right, good. Like, now mm-hmm. we're just, can we finally get this ship's, you know, mm-hmm. sailing right?
I'll say for me being, I was at 214. That was my, mm-hmm. my first credentialed event. So... it felt big for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, oh, I'm covering a UFC event. Oh, this is fantastic. And I'm seeing a legend in the sport compete mm-hmm. 30 feet away from me. So that was dope. But it felt like a foregone conclusion.
Right.
It was like, oh, yeah, Tonya Evinger probably should have been in the UFC before.
Yeah.
But she mm-hmm. definitely shouldn't have been in a featherweight fight. She definitely shouldn't have been in there against Cyborg in a featherweight title fight. So it had this air of inevitability, but for the wrong reasons when Cyborg won that belt. So, mm-hmm. like, last night... felt pretty damn cool.
Yeah, last night
felt big,
great.
Right?
It felt big. The crowd was cheering for her.
Both ways.
Because Julie had a huge contingent of fans there. And this is the first time you really felt like she was truly fighting another featherweight.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like
and
that.
And who was a great featherweight. So.
Yeah, not someone, well, we got a 35er in there. Just don't cut weight, you know, just because we need a main event, you know.
Go ahead, eat a pizza and just and jump in there. It felt like an actual weight class fighting, you know, fighting one another. It made a lot more sense. And seeing like Julia, I wouldn't say she towered over her necessarily
mm-hmm.
in the face-offs,
mm-hmm.
but she was bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she definitely was bigger, and that's something that we just don't see very often with Cyborg. Like,
mm-hmm.
we normally see Cyborg just hulking over
mm-hmm.
whoever she's in front of, and it was almost refreshing to see it the other way around. Mm-hmm. But then also, I think it was a reminder of how good she really is, because you can previously link a lot of her wins to just being bigger and bullying. Like, you think about the Jan Finney fight, where it was just, she's just throwing around like a rag doll. You think of even like the Leslie Smith fight, where it's just like, okay, as tough as Leslie is, like, she just can't overcome that size.
Yeah, Leslie fought at flyweight at one point.
Yeah, it's just nuts that some of these fights were made. But then you see her against Julia Budd, where she can't just purely bully her, where she can't, bullying can't be the number one thing she does. And then she's like, oh, she's going to outwork her with technique and outwork her with strategy and game plan. It was, I think it was a complete performance.
And patience.
Yes.
Which is like the single biggest improvement throughout Cyborg's run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just patience.
Because for that Nunes fight, I mean, she just kind of ran right at her. Mm. You know, that got so aggressive so quickly, and you could tell that she had learned from that experience. And even when a couple times when Julia hit her, like, got her, she would, like, back out and be like, okay, let me restart this.
Yeah.
So, because Julia landed some really good punches and elbows whenever they were clinched up, stuff like that, but...
A couple good teep kicks she snuck in there as well. Yeah. Like, Julia definitely, she got her licks in, but... It was just amazing to see. Like, you forget, like, Cyborg has bulldozed through so many people, and you just forget that she's really a technically very sound fighter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for her to even get a takedown against Bud and really work some decent top control, it was just the exact opposite what a lot of people would expect from the stereotypical Cyborg fight.
Yeah, and what put Julia down was a body shot.
Yes. That was, like, the perfect... like post Jason Perillo performance for Cyborg. And I think that was, for me coming into it, that was the way I kept framing it. It's like, this is it pre Jason Perillo Cyborg or post Jason Perillo Cyborg? Because we saw pre Perillo Cyborg against Nunes, just rushing in chin first and just ready to bang. But we saw Cyborg being very disciplined and patient and measured. And then you saw, like, the momentum just started shifting. And that first round was a little dicey. Mm-hmm. I think they both, you know, held their own very, very nice on that first round. Mm-hmm. But then as each round progressed, it was just Cyborg was just taking over just a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And then right when she knew she was hurt, just
then it turned into classic Cyborg.
There was Tekken.
Oh, yeah. I actually lost counts. I couldn't keep enough. I couldn't count fast enough. But that finishing combo... I counted 34 strikes. Not unanswered, but some were blocked. But she threw 34 punches and kicks and knees.
In succession.
With I think Bud maybe going like, ugh, every once in a while trying to like, let me punch my way out. Nope, not working. I watched, I was like, that looks just so incredibly scary for at that moment, you know. And it's just, but man, just like, just vintage Cyborg and an improved Cyborg at the same time. It's like, I think it was just like an absolute home run by Bellator and Cyborg. Then like a perfect game for Cyborg too. Just I can't think of a better way. Because if she would have came out and just one punched her and like I don't know something, the fact that it got drawn out and really you can
and that the first round was very even.
First round was close.
Actually, I was shooting from the blue corner, like that they were next to me, and I could hear Cyborg's corner.
Cyborg's corner.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cyborg's corner, like just like in the first round and in the second round, just constantly yelling, "You have time! You have time!" Just reminding her she can slow down, she can pick her shots, just constantly, just like slow down, slow down, slow down. Each time she wanted to go forward, they're like, and they calmed her down immediately, and she was really, really patient. And a patient Cyborg is very dangerous.
That's a very scary thing. Yeah. It's a very scary thing, and I'm so happy for Cyborg to get something, get a win like this, the way it played out. Because, like, let's take it back to last week. I think last week with Connor and Cowboy,
right?
Where Connor went out there and floored Cowboy so fast that the narrative doesn't always revolve around how good Connor is, but what sort of Cowboy were we looking at? And we don't have that argument with this fight at all. Like, Cyborg established dominance, but like sustained dominance, mm-hmm. and not just like some quick flash KO.
And Julia Budd wasn't knocked out a couple weeks ago, or knocked out. We didn't ever know it was broken, smashed in just 6 months ago. She was fresh.
Eight years undefeated.
Like,
and three title defenses under her belt. Like that. That's
like this felt like
her last loss was to Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, her last loss is Ronda Rousey. Yeah,
and before that, Nunes.
Nunes, yeah.
Like, she's only lost to goats.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is prime Julia Budd, healthy, mm-hmm. everything ready to go, and she got it, man. I was just like, what were your expectations coming into this? What did you predict before the fight started?
I kind of thought it would play out sort of like this.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Cyborg would eventually get a KO finish, mm-hmm. Because Budd's best hope to win that fight would be one of two ways. Either one, force the ground, and like this heavy wrestling and try to wear her out. Well, she did try in that first round, mm-hmm. and to varying levels of success during that. Or the other alternative is use her long legs and, mm-hmm. and play the reach, and maybe try to pick her apart. But I just thought Cyborg is too sophisticated of a striker, mm-hmm. too explosive for that to work. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you want to bully her and try to out wrestle her and stuff, like, well, she's pretty damn good grappler, mm-hmm. so it's a lot easier said than done. So it seemed like her path to victory would just expose her to too much danger, mm-hmm. and then eventually Cyborg would take over. I thought that she would definitely, maybe a little bit of the superstition in the play, because she did lose to Amanda Nunes at the Forum, mm-hmm. and maybe her walking back in that building again, she'd say, hey, maybe I need to keep my chin down and not just run straight at her. Mm-hmm. She would play the intelligence on that end. Mm-hmm. So it played out kind of the way I thought, but Cyborg was even more dominant than I expected, because she went offensive with some of the grappling, because there were times where, granted, that wasn't her main game plan, but she still was able to bully the bigger person in the clinch. Mm-hmm. And that was the spot that we thought Budd would be the strongest. Yeah. So I couldn't have been any more impressed by what she did.
Yeah, because, you know, when we were kind of comparing them and trying to see, like, Cyborg, I would give the edge in striking, you know, just in straight grappling, that kind of stuff. But for sure, in the clinch and the wrestling, I would have thought that Budd would have had the advantage. But Cyborg actually just showed that she was just a little better in every area.
And as the fight went on, the gap got bigger.
Yeah.
You can feel kind of Bud's hope almost just slowly wearing away, mm-hmm. and you start seeing a little more desperation in things that she was doing.
Yeah. The other reason why this is significant, in terms of just, she's fought in, you know, all these organizations and all this stuff, but that first title fight was 3 minute rounds.
Mm-hmm. Oh, against Gina?
Uh-huh.
That was on 3 minutes?
Uh-huh.
That craziness was in the only 3 minutes.
Yeah, didn't even remember. Wow.
Yeah. So that's why, I remember Coker saying this week, he was like, he was just, he thought that Cyborg was the best because she's managed to kind of like, people thought that her aggression was really only good for that particular like short, fast round. But she's kind of, you know, progressed through the longer rounds. And at the back in the day, that they most commissions didn't let women fight more than 3 minutes a round. So
let's talk about that. No, before we talk about that, how's your coffee, sir?
Yeah, I'm good.
How do you like the Stroop waffle? Fresh from... Oh,
that waffle is dope.
Did you put it on top of your coffee?
Yes, I did.
It got a little warm. Yeah. Like the edges are kind of stiff, and then the inside's a little...
Man, I came here to talk about people getting hit in the face for money, and I'm out here getting cultured, man.
You're getting cultured and fat.
I'm all sophisticated. Like, put my pinky up when I drink this coffee.
Hello. Some Japanese ceramics, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's before we talk about the rest of the Bellator card, which has some fantastic fights, mm-hmm. is Cyborg the GOAT?
Hmm.
I believe what Coker says is about longevity.
Mm-hmm. She has been super consistent.
Yeah, longevity, and that's why I can't give it to Amanda Nunes. It's like, right, I think Amanda Nunes right now, like this day, is the best female fighter, mm-hmm. maybe ever. I'm not 100% behind that, but I think she's the best female fighter right now on the planet. Mm-hmm. But she's obviously been inconsistent in her career.
Yeah.
Cyborg has not. Mm-hmm. So that's why I still...
And Cyborg's been fair, you know, has been on top, besides her loss last year, since, what, 2008?
I mean, regardless of, you know, depth in the division, I don't care, man. That's just, like...
She beat pretty much everybody they put in front of her. Like, that's all you can do.
And beating is an understatement. It was, like, just
demolishing.
Yeah. It's like,
and
just...
It's funny because people are like, oh, she crushed a lot of cans and all this stuff. It's not that. It's that people didn't want to fight her, but she... The impressive part is she fought these lesser opponents and destroyed them the way that a top fighter would.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times you'll see, like, someone come up and, like, someone who's very dominant fight, a no-name, and they might go the full five rounds or whatever and be like, oh, you weren't that good or whatever. It's like, but Cyborg has been consistent and has always destroyed her opponents.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, she's never fallen into that trap where, like, I think one of the knocks on John Fitch or something was like, you play to your competition, mm-hmm. sort of thing. Like, she's never done that. She's approached everyone exactly the same, mm-hmm. and given them the same amount of respect, which usually leaves them unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
My favorite Cyborg fights or moments is, I forget the girl's name. It wasn't one of
Daria
her most...
Daria Rajamova.
Yeah. And Cyborg at that point was just demolishing people in Invicta. And so she fought this girl, and she was kind of grappling with her and everything. And you could kind of tell Cyborg kind of wanted this fight to go a little longer.
She wanted rounds, yeah.
So, but toward the end of the first round, the girl, I think Cyborg threw a kick. It ripped off her toenail.
Cyborg ripped off her own toenail.
Throwing a kick. She looks down, and she's like, what the hell? And then she just beats the crap out of this girl. And just, like, finishes, like, in 10 seconds. She's like, nope. It just demolishes this poor lady. And I was like... At the time, I was like, oh, it's going to go to second round.
Yeah, because Daria had been holding on to her for, like, 4 minutes.
Yeah, just grabbing that leg, you know. Which not a lot of fighters in the past even made it the distance. Mm-hmm. Just by just holding that leg and just praying, you know. And Cyborg, you know, doing a little hammer fist. But just, these girls were tough enough. But when Cyborg saw her nice toenail ripped off, I just, nope, I'm like, this day's done.
And work day's over. Time to clock out. So, yeah.
So what do you feel? I mean, do you believe Cyborg is the GOAT?
Does
it matter? Is it just a stupid conversation?
It's a stupid conversation, but I enjoy having it.
And welcome to Coffee Talk. A stupid conversation we enjoy having. That's
MMA.
That's MMA. Like, it's so subjective. And I think if you were to make a case for a 1A and 1B, mm-hmm. this seems like a good idea. I think maybe like Jon Jones, Daniel Cormier, those conversations, yeah. GSP, Anderson Silva, there were certain people where they've done what they've done at the same time, mm-hmm. and maybe they've gone head to head, maybe not. But there's so many other factors to play in, because for and similar to the Jones Cormier thing, mm-hmm. for Nunes, she doesn't have any PED question marks around her. So if you want to factor that into GOAT status, in head to head competition, she's beaten Cyborg. Granted, I think if you rematch them, it might be a little different, but from the sample size that we saw, mm-hmm. of those two, you know, paired up against each other, Nunes is gonna win. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to take away the head to head factor, mm-hmm. but the longevity is undeniable. Like, mm-hmm. 10 years or 12 years? That's a massive amount of time in MMA. Okay.
We can talk about Cyborg for a while.
Yeah. Are we ever are we ever gonna get to see a rematch between her and Nunes?
Nope.
Unless Nunes decides to retire, and then I guess her contract expires or something like that, and Scott Coker picks up the phone, and because Nunes came up under Strike Force as well, so she's got a relationship with Coker. So if she answers that phone call, I can see it, but
I don't think we're gonna see it in their primes.
No. It's gonna be like a Chuck Tito 3-feel to it if it does happen.
Yeah. That'd be kind of weird.
I'd watch the documentary.
Yeah, 49-year-old Cyborg coming out with it. It's just no, but actually, I was. What? why is the UFC have a 45 division? A women's 45 division? Just why? Is it just, it seems like just out of spite, no?
Yeah, it just, it doesn't really make any sense. Like, I think it's this insistence on being number one with everything. So we gotta have, but you're not doing anything with it. Yeah. Just, you're not even trying.
Just let all those women outside of Nunes, you know, just release him and let Bellator have him. Because then that, I would love to see Felicia Spencer fight more. I would love to see Megan Anderson fight more. If fights that matter and it makes sense, you know, and seem the, like the fight's going to happen. Because
just fill out the division a little more. Yeah. It should be, it should just go to one org. Just because like, there's not quite enough. And even on the UFC rankings page,
there's no rankings.
Every single category has rankings except featherweight.
Yeah, and it's just a picture of Nunes.
Yeah.
Like, this, it's silly. Like, I would love to see Spencer versus Bud. Mm-hmm. Sign me up for that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm. The fight I really want to see is Spencer versus, she has to win her fight, but I want to see Spencer Nunes. Mm. I think that is a very tough fight for Amanda Nunes. Because if Amanda Nunes has shown any weakness throughout her whole career, is by strong grapplers putting in her back. Mm-hmm. And because that means coming into the Nunes Cyborg, that's how I thought the fight was going to go. I thought Cyborg was going to bite smart, clinch up, be stronger, take her down, and put her on her back. And we'll see where it goes from there. But obviously, it didn't go that way. But I personally don't think the UFC will ever have Nunes fight at 45 again. Because right now, Dana can just say forever, well, we knocked her out. You know, we knocked, you know, she got knocked out by this chick, and she's a 35er. You know, so I think I don't, and they, you know, the UFC loves bragging rights, and I think they kind of have this right now, even though it might not really mean anything competitively, but just from a troll point of view, you know, on a
and I think that it makes more sense for them just to leave it at that. You're right. Yeah. Then they get to have the upper hand. They get to have the end, the period on that story.
Yeah.
So.
The co-main event.
Yes.
Darren Caldwell versus Adam Borch for in the second round of Bellator's Featherweight Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. Coming into it, what did you think was going to happen?
Coming into it, I thought we were going to see another flying knee from Borch. Caldwell typically does the same sort of thing. He doesn't vary his setups very much, and you know exactly what you're going to get with him. Mm-hmm. The problem with knowing exactly what you're going to get from him is that the one who has made a pattern out of timing those takedowns to knee your head off into the rafters, you don't really, it's a dangerous day.
Yeah.
Very, very dangerous day. So I thought that that's what was going to happen, or at the very least, like Borks will be able to threaten it enough to where Caldwell would have to alter his game plan on the fly, and Borks kind of just take it over from there. But Caldwell did what he normally doesn't do, and that's fight aggressively. And that's, you know, be more of a striker, keep coming forward, and then mix in the takedown. And got the quick submission, too. Like, Caldwell putting on performances like that reaffirms my initial thoughts when those brackets were laid out, that he is the dark horse in this tournament.
Yeah, Caldwell at 45 has been progressively better.
You think so?
At 45, yeah. He wasn't as dominant, I guess, in his last fight, in his first tournament bout, but he just needed to win at that point. I think he was still adjusting to changing camps as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think. And for this one, actually, you know, you were saying about someone's making a career out of just, like, studying tape and timing you out. Like, that actually makes it really hard in the sense that if Caldwell decided this is the fight I'm going to be slightly different, it's like, oh, but I've watched all of his tape, or Adam Borch is like, his coaches have been studying Caldwell, and then Caldwell doesn't do anything that he normally does.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he has that, there's always that threat of the takedown is always going to be, it's going to put him in a higher position.
Yeah, he,
I think we kind of forgot how good Caldwell is because we had the Horiguchi fights in our head.
Yeah.
And that was
it was at bantamweight and he was exhausted.
Yeah.
Yeah, but remember how dominant Caldwell was before?
Yeah.
For Horiguchi?
Yeah.
Like he was actually, when he did the Borch, he was doing that to like the Higos, to the Dantes, you know, of Bellator. He was super dominant. that's why when he fought Horiguchi, I think Coker is under that same belief, like, no, we do have the best bantamweight. And I think that's why even Coker is still, he's still a bit shell-shocked that, yeah, that Caldwell lost twice to him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but I thought maybe Caldwell's time was done as far as, like, the best of the best. Obviously, he's always going to be top level, but mm-hmm. for me, but I was just, yeah, I thought it was going to be Borges' coming out party. Mm-hmm. Dude, I thought it felt that way coming in. It's like, oh, this kid's going to.
Yeah.
Especially after the Caldwell's last fight against Henry Corrales. It was just so, I mean, it definitely wasn't aesthetically pleasing. So let me just get that out the way. But it just didn't have, you knew exactly what was going to happen, and it just kept happening again. And it just, I didn't see anything new. I didn't see mm-hmm. any new wrinkle. I mean, he said after that fight, he felt so much better at 145, mm-hmm. but you couldn't really tell from the performance.
Yeah.
You know, but I do think the camp switch had a lot to do with him seeming sort of rejuvenated mm-hmm. last night. I know when I talked to him leading up to the Corrales fight, that was a major thing for him was the camp switch. And he threw a lot of shade at Alliance mm-hmm. For whatever reasons. I'm not quite sure what happened with those relationships, but he threw a lot of shade at that. And was saying how much he needed to be back with his old team. Mm-hmm. I think he's at Pinnacle now, yeah. Somewhere around here.
It's down here.
So he was so adamant about that. And now I think a lot of times when we see people switch camps, you kind of need to get one under your belt. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could talk about Aaron Pico this too. Like, you need to get one under your belt with that camp before things really start gelling.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we saw last night was things gelling. And now he feels truly back at home with his old team. And maybe, and like you said in the post fight, like he felt freer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You feel free. You try things. You do things mm-hmm. differently. You get a little more aggressive. You take some chances that you otherwise wouldn't have. I think he keeps that up, man. That AJ McKee fight. Good Ooh, Lord have mercy.
I am excited about that fight,
man.
Oh man, AJ McKee. You know what? If I'm pretty.
That's a little battle for the Southern California supremacy right there.
Yeah man.
I'm pretty sure. I was actually backstage watching that fight with we're working on interviews. So I was right next to John Morgan of MMA Junkie, and right before the fight started, we're kind of like, we both actually picked, we're kind of, who you got, you know, we're like, oh, I think Borges is gonna win, and like, we're like, yeah, but if Caldwell wins, it's gonna be a bad 20, because remember it was a 25 minute fight, so
yeah.
I think that was the fear, like, oh man, but if Caldwell does win, it's gonna be a bad 25 minutes we have to sit through. And God, we were just like so shocked. And if Caldwell would have won in a 25 minute fashion that we thought he was gonna win, if he was gonna win, like the McKee fight, we wouldn't be that excited. But we're like, oh God, this could be. But now, like, it's amazing how 90 seconds of action just kind of changes your entire view on a fighter.
And it changes the way the tournament looks, the Grand mm-hmm. Prix. So.
Yeah, because I think we were all kind of. I want to say we mentioned this to each other during fight week, like. And Borges versus McKee, two undefeated females, yes, please. And we kind of just...
Yeah, we're like, I want to see that, yeah.
Chops at that, like, oh, this is going to be crazy. But now we didn't see that.
Yeah.
I'd say if Caldwell went out and did what he did against Corrales, we would be excited for that fight, but not for the same reasons.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be excited more to see how McKee handles it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, okay, how solid is his takedown defense? If you get him down, mm-hmm. Can you keep him down? What does he look like off of his back? It would have been all these different questions that centered solely around McKee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now it's like, we're excited for both.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
absolutely.
Like, really excited. Like,
yeah. Like, damn. I mean, yeah.
Just fanboy for just a second.
Hey, and props to Coker and Bellator, having McKee right there, having that face off right there. You know, it seems cheesy, like, you know, WWE, but I don't know. It works.
It works.
I'm a sucker.
You're feeling it. I was like, ooh.
It's like,
they don't like each other.
You know, actually, I was wondering about his fight against Henry Corrales in the sense that, because Juan Archuleta had a boring showing against Henry Corrales. And I wonder if that's just how you beat him.
I think it's the only way you
because otherwise you get sucked into a brawl.
Yeah.
And you get knocked out.
You get Aaron Pico'd.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, you can't just go in there and just swing at Corrales. And even if you try to strike with him in a more measured approach, it's going to be you have to use footwork. You've got to be elusive. You got, like, Archuleta looked a lot like his teammate TJ Dillashaw in there.
Yeah.
Like, you have to fight that sort of fight, because Corrales, if his feet are planted and he's throwing a bomb at you, you're going
to
explode.
Yeah. Like, if you want to trade with Corrales, You're gonna go to sleep. Yeah, that's not smart.
And he's able to still unleash that sort of power and still keep coming at you when he's cracked. Like when we remember back to the Pico fight, Pico
had hurt him really bad.
Hurt him really bad. Like it was an inevitability that Pico was going to get the finish at that point, and then he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't ever just rely on, oh, I'm gonna knock out Henry Corrales. You better get them skates on.
I was watching the fight, and I was saying, you know what? I think Corrales is probably the pound-for-pound best fighter when concussed. Give that man some head trauma before the fight. Oh, he will F you up. You know, it's like, you know, he just has, and even Archuleta said that in his pre-fight stuff. It's like, oh, the guy's a zombie. You know, it's like, that's when he wakes up, when you hit him. Mm-hmm. So you just got to hit him and run.
Yeah, he's kind of got that old, like, that like Stephen Bonner sort of thing too. Like he's got to see his own blood or something, and then all of a sudden, oh yeah, let's do this.
I think of Corrales as like the Matt Brown of Bellator.
Yeah,
it was at least like the older Matt Brown, which is like, now you interview Corrales, like he kind of just like,
oh, he's the most matter of fact guy.
Yeah, you know, train hard. You're like, what's it like, we knocked out Pico? Oh, it was cool.
Yeah.
And then I'd say, like, okay, nice. Well, have a good luck Saturday.
I'm so glad that y'all have had that same experience with him, because I thought, like, am I just really a bad interviewer? I don't know what's going on. But
and then after you press stop, you know, he's like, hey, thanks for the interview.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, all right, man. Like, I thought you were mad at me.
It's not me.
You can tell you're just a unique dude. And but that's what the sport's full of, unique dudes.
Yeah, it's funny because we brought up to him his post-fight interview. After he did Pico,
the best underrated post fight interview.
Yeah.
What was the line he said?
He says, "What is this, like? I've lived a mediocre life up to this point. I was ready to die in this bitch."
Yeah.
And I was like, "What?" And then when you ask him about it later, he's like, "Oh, I said that."
Yeah. And then when he like he just glossed over like some story about somebody trying to stab him to death.
Yeah.
And he was just like, he's like, yeah, like the time those guys tried to stab me. Like, next question.
Rewind.
Tell us about the stabbing.
I have a follow-up.
Excuse me.
Like, we didn't know you were Batman in your spare time. Like, tell us more.
And then like he talks about his teeth. He's like, he has like no, his teeth were like just, his top two teeth right here and bottom were, they're gone because when he fought Pitbull. And Pitbull, he just ate a giant knee. And I think he even finished the fight. You think he went five rounds with Pitbull, but without like his front teeth just like, going this way. so it's actually interesting. You said it, if you don't say it in interviews, but like, so I think a couple weeks out before every fight, like before he goes to the actual fight, he has to take them, their screw-ins, he has to go to
get implants
and everything. Mm-hmm. So, dude, I love her. Corrales, that's all. Even though he's one of those guys where, him guys, Henry Corrales talk. That's what this is.
Well, the crowd was spoiled last night because, and you know, they were booing so quickly at the Archuleta Corrales fight, but they were spoiled because from the very first fight, I think.
Well, no, what was right before that fight? Sergio Pettis.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sergio Pettis. Holy was crap! Right before that, with the crazy, he knocked. How many times did he knock Kashakian out?
Yeah, he submitted a dead body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how did he get there? Like.
Clothesline.
Well, Pettis got dropped. You remember Pettis got hit? He was like wobbly, and the was Alfred
Kashakian
came in for the kill. And so Pettis like, oh, fuck you.
It's like that clothesline just.
I was like, oh my god, and like, yeah, we talked to Pettis backstage. He's like, did that hurt? He's like, yep. He's like, yeah, I felt that, but it's like, I got strong legs. But he said, yeah, his body went out, boom, caught him, and Alfred got a little too anxious, and whew, paid a price.
All right,
exciting times.
Yeah, and then before Pettis was. Pico? Was he right?
No, dude. That's why we had so much action. Raymond Daniels.
Raymond Daniels. Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, there was so much action last night.
So that was so crazy. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Jason King ate so many of those body shots.
The spinning kicks, over and over. And the thing, they were hurting him so bad, but most of those weren't even landing flush. Like, he was able to get out of the way a lot of them, and they were just, like, grazing him to the side, and you could just see him wince every time. Like,
last time when he didn't want to get up, he was like,
yeah, he really thought about that. He sat there and was just like, man, did they pay me enough?
You could tell, like, he was almost sitting on the ground waiting for the ref to go, all right, you're done.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, come on, ref. Don't make me quit here. Help me out here. I don't know. That's my sense. And the ref was like, nah, you're going to die.
Yeah, it's like those moments where Jason King was on his back thinking like, man, did I pick the right career?
Yeah.
Like that looked like a come to Jesus moment.
Yeah.
Just laying on your back and just seeing the God of spin kicks just annihilate you every time you blink your eyes.
Hey, and then Jason King actually did get Raymond down at one point, mm-hmm. and they clenched up and
tried to get him a leg lock.
Yeah, Raymond, tried to get him in a leg lock, and Raymond Daniels reacted.
Yeah,
right. Did everything proper. Yeah.
He apparently
Raymond Daniels. I mean, from what he says, he's training with the right people. He had Mark Munoz in his corner.
Mm-hmm.
He's training with he's got like high level wrestlers he's working with. He's doing his strength and conditioning with Sam Calavita. Mm-hmm. So he's actually training with Archuleta and those guys now. So he's like, I think 37 now. So, but he says like, I'm in my prime though. He's ready. Mm-hmm. So
he looked more ripped than normal. He's never been a guy who looks like he has a soft body or anything. But I don't ever recall.
But he's also not super fast.
I don't remember seeing him with the veins down his arms and like the 8-pack or whatever. Yeah. But he had it. Like, I mean, the strength and conditioning thing it definitely looks like he should focus on that end a lot. Mm-hmm. Granted, he was just spamming spin kicks. I know that's mm-hmm. very tiring, mm-hmm. but he was breathing really hard
mm-hmm.
Toward the end of that fight. Like, mm-hmm. If you put him up against a higher level competition and he's gassing like that, granted, he probably wouldn't attempt those sort of moves
mm-hmm.
Against different competition, but yeah, he might want to really focus on that part if he's intending on really climbing the ladder, but I don't think he is.
He says he is. I mean, I know people say everything, but...
He says he is, but he's also starting pretty late in his career, so he might also just be here to have fun.
Yeah, and he's in the right promotion to just have fun with it. Like, you know, getting a main card placement on a card this big...
Mm-hmm.
And you're fighting a guy who, quite frankly, you know, no disrespect, was brought in to lose. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't say that the promotion is really trying to fast track him to a title shot or anything.
And they shouldn't before this fight, he was only 1-1. Now he's 2-1. And like a lot of people in the comments of our Instagram page are like, oh, he fought a can. I was like, he's a 1-1 fighter.
Yeah,
who do you think he should fight?
Who do you want next for Raymond Daniels?
I'm thinking, I would like to see him in MVP.
Yeah.
Because that's just sexy. That's just crazy, man.
You just want to see all
it's just like a dance.
Yeah.
it's like a scene from The Matrix.
I think that's an awesome fight. But I think Paul Daly.
Paul. I'm not mad at that. But I think that that's inviting the return of Division I Paul Daly. Who tried to grind out MVP, which of course is mixed martial arts fight. That's what can happen. But I don't want to see that, man. I want to see.
So you just don't believe in Paul Daly anymore, has it?
No, I believe in Paul Daly.
No, but he might want to
believe in Paul Daly against a striker.
No, I believe in seeing Raymond Daniels and MVP just Shaw Brothers their way through an entire Bellator fight.
I'm into that.
That's all I want to see.
And honestly, I feel like it's kind of why people like Bellator. It exists. And this is why I like having different organizations, is that there's no more coffee.
No! These delicious waffles are still available for you.
But there should be different feels. Everyone shouldn't have the same kind of a promotional machine, you know?
Of course not.
I like that there's differences, and I like that there's this, like, and every promotion also has this, like, there are fights you just want to see.
Yeah.
And this is just a fight you just want to see. I'm just curious. I just want to know what it looks like.
Oh, God. Now we're talking about just fights I want to see. Now the fight we're not going to see is Raymond Daniels versus Michael Pereira.
Okay.
Wow. UFC welterweight, Mr. Flippy Flip.
Wow. Yeah. I just like sign me up.
kind of sweating. You know, guys, just okay. UFC, you're rich. You won. Now cross promote. Come on. Yeah,
let's borrow this guy.
You won. Night. You won. Yeah. Again. You got your PI. Got your Apex. Yeah, you won. You guys are doing great. Congratulations. You know. But now, come on. Let's have some fun here.
I had a moment like that where I had a flashback to a fight that I really wanted to see. Because Kung Lee was in the building.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to see Kung Lee versus Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
That it has just been one of those fights where it's just chop socky fun. I'll take
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Just here. Here's a bag of money. Here's a bag of money.
Yeah, it's like, here. Just do it. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah. That would have been great. I actually.
That's
that
is you the know one. What? I don't know if that's off the table. This is.
That is honestly is the. Well, I mean.
It still could happen.
Yeah. But, you never know.
But it won't be in their primes anymore.
Yeah, whatever.
But I do appreciate that about. Just because we had been talking about Ryzen a couple weeks ago and how they were really proud that they had this card that didn't have any, you know, freak show fights on it or whatever. I was like, but freak show fights are fun. And it's honestly what people like about MMA is that it has all these weird unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's people like MMA because there's this. You can just be like, well, these two guys are just crazy strikers. Let's do it. It doesn't even matter that they're not ranked at the same or whatever. Just let's just have this fight happen. And so I think that like Kung Lee Anderson Silva, like those are things that like these are dream fights because they capture our imagination, and I want more of that. I would love to see more of that.
Aaron Pico.
Good. Well, I guess he's doing all right for himself these days.
Has there ever been a more kill or be killed fighter?
Yeah, right.
Right now than Aaron Pico. I mean, like I can't think of a fighter that's either you dead or I'm dead. I mean, who?
Maybe Chris Leben or something? Chris,
yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, you know, it's like you gotta go really far back to think of someone.
Like, I can't imagine either of these guys. I mean, I can't imagine Pico honestly fighting, going to the decision without him or the other guy getting slept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, Pico is very difficult for me to talk about Aaron Pico in general without just mentioning how, like, professional and classy that dude is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's. Despite the fact that he's only, 23?
Yeah, he's 23 now,
And he's been the toast of the town since he was, 18 or something. Like, even younger than that.
Honestly, since, a young teenager.
Because he was beating adults when he was 16.
He was a wrestling phenom. He was actually a gold amateur golden gloves.
Pancration champion and stuff. Like, so he's been the toast of the town for a very, very long time. And he still handles himself with so much class and a lot of humility despite just oozing with confidence. And it's an interesting balance that he has. And it would be understandable to worry about Aaron Pico when you look at what 2019 was like for him. That was a rough year,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting floored in two KO of the year candidates, fights that everyone thought he was going to, you know, run through somebody.
And to a point he was.
We said about the Corrales fight in Boris, he was definitely beating him with the wrestling, went in for that same takedown flying knee to death. So Pico, man, he came in with a lot of focus and so complimentary of his new team at Jackson Wink. And like we were saying earlier, where sometimes it takes that one fight when you're with that new team, and then after that things start gelling. And
so people know for the his last loss against Adam Borch, he was technically with Jackson Wink. He had left Body Shop. Which is Antonio McKee and AJ McKee, obviously, who he trained with. But he's very limited time for the Adam Borch fight. So this fight was his first real camp.
Yeah,
for this fight.
Full camp, and he had moved his horses out to Albuquerque, so he knew it was serious.
Yeah,
moved his horses.
His girlfriend and his horses.
Yeah, his girlfriend and his horses.
Yeah, he the way he described Albuquerque now, where he's saying it's home to him now, and you know, Whittier is definitely where his roots are and stuff, but he feels so at home in Albuquerque, and that's so important too, because can you imagine being the toast of the town at that young age? And you're fighting in your hometown, you're training in your hometown, you're surrounded by all these people that just love and adore you and have since you were a child.
Driving down a street named after your own grandparents.
Exactly, where like his family has significant history in the Los Angeles area. So it you gotta sometimes remove yourself from that and start anew, and that's seems to be what he's done. And he's talking about how like Brandon Gibson he's particularly gelled with him, and John Jones called him before the fight to offer some words. So things like that where you aren't, and he was on the prelims as well.
Yeah,
which is smart. I think a good decision.
Kind of dial back the spotlight a little bit and let him be a young man. Let him be a developing fighter.
Yeah, I think the key is to. I'm so glad that they started doing this because it's like. Yeah, okay, so he had a lot of hype, but he's still a guy that has less than 10 fights under his belt. Can we not keep putting him against people who are undefeated, 11-0, whatever? Like, let's...
10, what was he, 4-3? I think he was 4-3, and he had less than 10 minutes of actual cage time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you're finally going to start to see... because everybody needs to improve in their field, right? Mm-hmm. Like, him being a standout wrestler, it doesn't mean he's going to be an amazing MMA fighter. And he should, he should have been incrementally brought up.
Right.
I think he should have been, but I get they were going for it.
Yeah.
You know,
because he was so highly paid and he was so touted. Like, they were like, we're just going to throw you in there. And it's like, and his pride maybe was like, sure,
because he's an extremely confident guy, and that confidence is well founded. I mean, since he was like 12, he's been beating people in international competition in mixed rules disciplines. Like it's like to be a highly touted prospect in wrestling and to be courted by the USA wrestling, you know, Olympic, whatever they're called.
Mm-hmm.
He's being courted by them. While he's also one of the hottest prospects in boxing and being courted by that world, famously training with Freddie Roach at Wildcard, and then also actually competing in Pancration, which is essentially MMA, and he's winning competitions overseas and that, that's not your average, you know, amateur. That's not your average prospect. Mm-hmm. That's a seasoned competitor at that point. So it makes sense that they pump the gas a little bit on him. But then of course you add the brighter lights of, you know, a debut in Madison Square Garden and, you know, a homecoming fight in Inglewood, you know, with Fedor on the main event. Like there are a lot of things that level of competition can't quite prepare you for.
Yeah.
And with his mentality, you need someone to kind of hold you back a little bit.
Yeah.
You need someone to put the brakes on and be like, hey, like, I know you're capable of this.
Yeah.
But let's ease your way into it and make sure you're totally ready.
Yeah. And lastly, I thought that AJ Agazarm was impressive in his comeback win, because he looked like trash in that first round and then.
Yeah. Oh, he got a piece of like. That was such a crazy round. I mean, that's an early fight of round of the year candidate right there. Because I think right after it, I said something stupid on Twitter. I was like, can we score 10-8 rounds for both guys?
Yeah.
It's like they both just murdered each other.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, because the nature of Adele's Atumimi's success in that, you would think it would carry over more into the later rounds.
Yeah.
To, you know, when you damn near knock a guy out with a variety of strikes, you figure like, okay, that concussive damage will last a little bit longer than getting caught in a choke toward the end of the round. But AJ, man, he did the damn thing. I don't,
you know, he proved to me. He proves he's a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He's not a jiu-jitsu guy doing MMA. He's a fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was impressive. You can't fake that. You can't do that in the gym. It can only happen on fight night in front of the cameras, in front of the crowd, under the lights. Yeah. You're really, you know, a fighter.
And what a progression too from his, and he showed a lot of progress in his last fight. I can't remember who he was fighting in that last one, but his debut fight, which was also at the Forum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I think the second fight was at the Forum also.
Yeah.
Yeah. He spends a lot of time there. So his debut fight, I mean, he got outstruck by kind of amateur striking.
Yeah.
It was nothing too flashy. It was nothing too sophisticated. He just looked kind of shell shocked. He didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So he started taunting and doing everything but actually fighting.
Yes.
And to see him run into a little bit of adversity in his last fight, and respond so well, but then to like damn near get decapitated from Altamimi. And Altamimi just so tricky with a lot of his setups, yeah, and spin kicks, and he's going spinning back fists, and he's doing a lot of really intricate weird things, and got caught with a lot of it, and he just figured it out.
Yeah.
And it was resilient.
And one hell of a submission to finish that fight.
Oh, yeah. With the Agger's arm,
the modified triangle, which I looked at it when it was happening. I was like, I don't know what that is. I couldn't tell if it was an armbar. I couldn't tell if it was a triangle. I couldn't tell if it was a bicep slicer. Yeah. It looked like everything.
I was so annoyed because I didn't have like a good view. I don't have a picture of it. So I was just like, I was looking and all I saw was just limbs. And I was like, I wish I could get a picture of this, but it won't make any sense.
Yeah, he said he's landed that in jiu-jitsu tournaments.
You say landed in Polaris a couple times, yeah. I think. But I was so confused about it, too, because at that point, when it hit the floor and they were in that position, you know, I immediately turned to the big screen, of course, because just sitting case, I
could not see that.
It was just a jumble of body parts. But seeing that, I was like, what? Like, what? Because the arm didn't get trapped in.
Exactly, because it was an arm bar originally, then he laces it through, and then it becomes a triangle somehow.
I was like trying to say, so where exactly, what's cutting off the artery, and what, you know, and then when the tap, which I guess caused some controversy that he tapped. From what I saw,
he tapped, and it's fine.
Yeah. I think it's just that he was a black belt, so he was just, you know, it's just, it sucks when you have to submit, when you have to tap, you know?
Yeah.
I think he was just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he used to train at a Homolo Bahoral, so he was feeling like, there were other fights yesterday, too.
There were Curtis Melinder. Okay. Oh, wait, that was Bellator. But
that was
a great
day. That was also great.
Got a good debut. But apparently, there's another mixed martial arts promoter who had some fights on the other side of the country.
Yeah, UFC Raleigh happened, and I actually didn't get a chance to watch most of it. I saw the results. The only fight I went back and watched was Angela Hill's fight because I wanted to see some killer elbows, and then I did.
PG County stand up, Angela Hill. She got the victory there. Was very happy to see that. I didn't get to watch all this card too. I tried to, and then I woke up with my head slumped in my chest, and my son was crying at whatever ungodly hour it was. So,
thanks for joining us for Coffee Talk this week.
Thanks for having me at the Panda Dojo.
Coffee Talk. Nothing in them.
I got a little bit of my. But this has been Coffee Talk with Anthony Walker. Thank you so much for joining us.
Where can we find Anthony Walker on the internet?
Yes.
You can find me on Twitter at AntWalkerMMA. It's also my Instagram. I very rarely post, but follow me anyway, just in case I do. And then my YouTube channel, The Walkout Network. Nice. So I post some stuff there. And I got a weekly column now with Kristen King for my MMA news. So, DMs are open. Come get this work.
All right. And you can follow us on TikTok.
We don't have a TikTok.
Yes, we do.
What's TikTok?
Yes, we do, old man.
All right.